So that's another thing a lot of people don't realize. Whenever I share blog tips and all of the things with the YouTube and the Instagram, I did not start this until I was 30 years old. I spent my whole 20s having babies, learning how to make bread, sew clothes, you know, learn my way around a computer, learn a little bit of business basics, what not to do. And then when I was 30, it wasn't like I was like, well, now I'm ready to start a successful business. I just had the experience and the background that made it to where it had a chance at being successful. So none of those early things I did are regrets. They all were learning experiences.
My name is Lisa, mother of 8 and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today is going to be a little bit different because I am doing a solo episode. Going to try to be doing more of these in 2024. The podcast started this way 4 years ago, early 2020. I sat down in front of the camera and for an entire year, each week, I shared something like this, just my story about something or some tips, things I'm learning, things I'm cooking. And now a lot of my homemaking tips I share throughout my YouTube videos because I do them a bit differently on my Farmhouse on Boone channel. So I will share sort of like a B-roll style of content and then talk about things that we're doing, things that we're learning. But I really originally created this podcast space for a place to share deeper, more things in depth that I share on my YouTube channel. So the same kind of concepts, but more in depth. And after a year, I felt like I had said it all. Now, I know that's not true because I listen to podcasts and some of my favorite podcasts just honestly talk about the same things over and over again. And it's just a message that you need to be reminded of. And I need to remember that sometimes it's okay to repeat yourself. But I have loved the last couple of years having guests on every week because they bring a different perspective to the show that I really appreciate. We have put out some question boxes over on YouTube and Instagram to hopefully get some ideas from you. Who do you want to see back on? Who haven't I had on that you want to see? Are there any topics that you want me personally just to go more in depth on? We are open for suggestions. It's been, like I said, 4 years since I started this podcast. And sometimes it feels like I've said it all. But again, there are things that we need to be reminded of. I need to remember that I have people who just found out about this podcast in the last few months who have not heard all of those earlier episodes. So today, I got a listener comment or DM. Whenever I'd had on Michelle Visser, someone commented and said that I said a line in the podcast that I needed to go more in depth on. So in this show somewhere, I said, I've started unsuccessful businesses. And someone said, Lisa, this one needs to be a whole episode, please. These are the lessons that will help people push through and give themselves grace. Maybe an interesting episode idea to talk through your entrepreneurial journey. So I agree. I think that that would be also, really quick, I know I just mentioned that I put up a question box for you to leave your input. If you aren't on Instagram or YouTube and you're just listening to this on Spotify or Apple, there's a place that you can go on the web in order to submit your questions. So I've made a link. It's bit.ly, so bit.ly/SFL. Those three letters are caps, so it stands for Simple Farmhouse Life, questions in lowercase. Should have made this easier, but it's a case sensitive link. So it's bit.ly. That part is not case sensitive. So bit.ly/SFL in caps, questions in lowercase. When you go there, you can submit your questions for me to take on the show. So I'm kind of just like putting it out there. Help me figure out what to talk about in 2024. I'm excited to do it. And sometimes I just want your input. Okay. So I want to talk through my entrepreneurial journey. So for those of you who are brand new to my podcast, maybe you've never seen this content before. Hi, I'm Lisa. I have 8 kids. I have been married for 16 years. We live on a 7-acre homestead in an 1860s Victorian farmhouse with a barn and a silo and a cottage. We moved here 5 years ago, and it was pretty much our dream place. We lived on a quarter acre in town before that in a 1920s house. I fixed it up. I made it my little farmhouse on Boone. It was on Boone Street, and that's what my YouTube and blog is named after. I turned the whole backyard into a garden. We had chickens, but it was just a tiny lot next to a public park on a busy street in a town. And so badly, before we had too many kids and the kids were too old, I wanted and was desperate to get out to some land. Now that 5 years have passed, as we're here, we had three more little boys. So we have 8 kids in total. The 6 youngest are all boys. I can see how that was a desperation that needed to happen. Right now, if it's not -5 out, which it has been, the boys need so much outside time, so many places to run. And that's not to say that you can't have a bunch of kids and not live on a little bit of acreage or a place with a little bit of privacy, but it sure does make life a lot easier. And I can say this with a fresh perspective because this last week we had record lows in Missouri and the kids actually did have to be inside all day, every day. And I don't even know how I did that before because we have to spend a lot of time outside, and having a busy street in front of our house and a public park behind it definitely wasn't conducive for that. It was really nice for when I had the 2 little girls and we went around in our stroller and we had little play dates. We went to the library for a story time. That was fun. But as our family grew, we wanted a homestead. We wanted a place where we could grow more food, milk our cow, have more chickens, all that good stuff. So the reason why I'm sharing all that is because it is the entrepreneurial journey that got us to this position. With the financial situation or with the job that we had before, we wouldn't have been, well, we probably definitely along the line eventually been able to come here, but it did require us to work remotely because this is a lot further away from where my husband used to work. And it required us to save up money because we are very committed to debt freedom. So we actually bought this property with cash, and we don't like to go into debt of any kind. It's not necessarily like a conviction, like if we feel like religiously convicted on it, but we do feel convicted on it. But I guess whenever you say conviction, it makes it sound like you think people are bad if they don't. And all my friends and family, everybody, you know, carries debt, and there might be a time where we have to for whatever reason. So it's not that. It's just I feel that life feels very free, that your options are open. And as much as we could, we wanted to do that. So we weren't going to, even if we did have to take on a little bit of debt, we weren't going to be able to get something, you know, super outlandish or anything beyond our means. And in order to buy this place with cash, the additional income and the working remotely was a very important piece of that. So let's start with, I guess as a kid, I mean, that's where my entrepreneurial journey would start. Most of the time, whenever I know somebody or hear somebody's story who has a successful business, usually they say something like, oh, when I was a kid, I was always trying to make things and sell them. I've been, you know, doing this or that since I was little. And I don't really have that story unless I'm just remembering it wrong. Maybe my mom could correct me, but I don't feel like I really took on entrepreneurial attempts or whatever as a kid. But I probably did always have a creative spirit. We were raised very traditionally for the years that I was born in. So I was born in the year 1985. I went to daycare, I went to school. And so I didn't really have time at home like my kids do. And so it's hard to say what kind of things I might have tried with free time. But I don't really remember having free time. So I don't feel like it's hard to say, you know, what kind of things I would have done as a kid, because I see my kids doing certain things and I think that's probably what I would have been doing. They're always making something. They love to sell things. We have these homeschool markets and they love to like come up with a concept and sell it. I have one kid who's particularly good at it. He's just good at it. He's a natural. And so I don't know if that kind of comes from my side because I do have an entrepreneurial spirit and I grew up with entrepreneurs as well. So my parents do have their own business. They've since sold and retired. And my dad's very good with figuring out how businesses work, how money works, and just he's just generally good at all of that and always has been. And so I've seen that in my family. I've seen my sisters, they're all very entrepreneurial. So I think there is some natural bent towards it. But that doesn't mean that somebody comes, you know, from a family who nobody did anything, you know, on their own or entrepreneurial wise, and yet still they do. So I'm not saying that that's not possible. I do feel that there is a bit of a natural bent towards that in my family. My sister also has the same kind of business that I have. Their family does it full time. My younger sisters have their own ventures. So we all kind of like that.
I want to take a quick break to tell you about my blogging masterclass. So 7, almost 8 years ago, I bought the domain farmhouseonboone.com and started posting on a blog. Since then, I have learned so much. The first several years was just me figuring out what to post, lots of light bulb moments. Spoiler alert, it's no longer a journal where you share what your family's doing and what you're working on. Blogging is a whole different strategy. A lot of people think that blogging is dead, but it is far from dead. It's actually the most profitable part of our business is blogging. So it is by no means dead, but it does require a whole different strategy. And I see a lot of people making a lot of mistakes, even some seasoned bloggers who aren't aware of like how blogging has changed. That is why I have my free masterclass where I show you my 4-step framework that I use for becoming a full-time blogger. So for over 5 years now, my husband's been home. We've made blogging a full-time income. And you can find that masterclass over at bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school. All one word, all lowercase, bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school.
Now, as an early married woman, so I got married when I was 22. We had our first child at 23. So right away when we got married, I went to college. I did all the traditional route. You know, I went through all the years of school. I got my bachelor's degree. I got it in marketing, but this was in 07 when I graduated. So I can't really say that it necessarily helped me in today's world because there was no social media in my marketing classes. None of that was on the radar. I do feel like I learned a little bit about like the idea of positioning a brand before the world in a certain way that would make it work better. So I learned like the basics of marketing in those classes. But then I got married just a few months after I graduated. So I graduated in 07 in December and I got married in December of 07. And we were Christians at this point. I believe I've shared bits and pieces of my testimony throughout my different podcast episodes. I did not grow up a Christian. I was not a Christian when I met my husband, and neither was he. We both got saved, everything changed, and we decided that we are going to get married, have a family, all that good stuff. And with all of that came the conviction that I would stay home and we would homeschool. So this is 07 that we got married. We got pregnant pretty quick and our daughter was due on our first anniversary. And I don't want to say bored because in those early days, I was just figuring out how to keep my home, how to be in charge of my own time. I'd never really been in charge of my own time because my time was very, you know, it was very accounted for. I had places I had to be. I did sports. I did school. I had homework. I definitely took my grades and all that seriously. I was one of those A students for sure. And so I didn't know exactly what to do with my time and I wasn't trained in that. I didn't, you know, have any experience taking just a whole day and figuring out what to do with it. So while I was pregnant with her, I substitute taught at a public school in our area. It was just a way to earn money really easily without getting a full-blown job because I knew that as soon as she was born, I wouldn't be going into the workforce. So I basically got my degree and then quickly decided that I wasn't going to actually use it. But still, it wasn't on my mind that I would like figure out how to make my own job, if you will. When she was born, I spent those early years learning a lot of skills. So I quickly learned that there was a lot to do at home. I learned how to sew. I had this little daughter. She was so cute and I wanted to dress her cute. So I found some blogs and I learned how to like stitch a ruffle and put together a basic dress. And so my days were spent learning how to make bread, learning how to cook, learning how to sew and make cute clothes for her. I was very proud of what I was learning. I was also spending a lot of time trying to make our house a home on a very, very low budget. So I don't remember like the exact numbers, but It was a low hourly wage that we were getting at that time. My husband was just working. I was staying home. We drove, you know, like junky cars, bought an expensive house. And I always have to give the caveat because, you know, people tend to compare themselves and think if I'm saying like, this is my story, they need to tell me like why that wouldn't work for them. And just take in mind or keep in mind, this is my story. And I'm not saying this is what you should do or that it'll work out like this for you. God has had his hand in this. I do feel so blessed. I feel like everything has just worked out exactly how I wanted it to. No credit to me on that. All glory to God on that. So there are parts of this story that I'm like, yeah, I don't know. That was really like such a blessing. I don't even know how we are able to have that happen for us, but it did. Praise God. So we were in the position of buying our home in 08, which if you have any familiarity with the real estate market, you know, we got a really cheap house. It was a decent house for a really cheap price because everything crashed. So yeah, that was like, whew, like amazing. I don't even know how kids today, looking at the real estate prices, how they're affording to purchase a home. I don't really know. But at that time, that worked out really well. And we were just committed to me being home and learning things in the home. And I was very content to do that. I quickly saw that there was a lot there that was fun. So I was taking the old furniture that my husband inherited from his parents' basement and making slip covers for it. We were painting all the low budget things that I could add some elbow grease in to make the house beautiful and function, but without renovating. There was definitely no budget for that. So that's the first, I'd say, couple years. Now, 2 years in, we had our second daughter. Again, I'm sewing, I'm learning things, and I decide to start listing some of the items that I'm sewing over on Etsy. And so I guess that would be the first thing I did in our marriage to earn an income. I particularly remember, and I'm almost even embarrassed to say it because it's such a dumb name, but I made this cute little dress from Amy Butler Fabrics, and I called it the Fanciful Fall Frock. Oh my word, my husband would laugh at this if he heard it because he remembers it too. And that thing just sold like hotcakes. It was like this floral red fabric. Then there was like a blue, brown, yellow, and red main fabric. And I did the sleeves in the red, the main fabric, and then I put the sleeve fabric as like a waistband. It was a really fast sew. I could get it done in, I'd say less than an hour because it was like a peasant style dress with the elastic on it. And it, because it was so fast to sew, I sold it for really cheap. I think I was selling it for like 25 or 30 bucks. So naturally it was getting sold like crazy. And I felt like, oh my word, like I can, while I'm here with my kids at their nap time, or even like with my daughters on my lap, I actually remember like my first incident, and I'm probably gonna get judged for this, but she's fine. She's 15 now. She's fine. She sews herself. She's not traumatized. But I remember having her on my lap, and this was before I realized like she was gonna lunge forward and like grab stuff because she was my first baby. I was 23 years old. I don't know why, but I guess I paid no attention to little kids till I had them. And so I just didn't know a lot about little kids. Even though I had a couple of little sisters, I just didn't know anything about them. But anyways, she kind of like lunged forward and I got her finger in the sewing machine needle. And she obviously like was very upset by it. We didn't have to do anything, just, you know, just watch it and whatnot. And she's totally fine now. But after that, I learned like put the baby in a baby carrier or like give them a little tummy time while I'm trying to finish sewing. But I've always been a very busy mom. Like I'm the one where if the kitchen's dirty, but the two-year-old's crying, I just put the two-year-old on my hip and I wipe down the counters with one hand. I feel like there's a lot you can get done with kids if you just keep going. Obviously, don't sew with them on your lap. That's a bad idea. Unless they're in a wrap. So I still do that to this day. I will sew with a baby in the wrap when they're sleeping, faced in and whatnot, and their arms aren't out. But definitely like, you know, I'll cook dinner while nursing. I just try to still move on with my life, even with the little kids around. It makes it a lot harder, but it can be done just less efficiently. So then with my, let me finish the story on that whole Fanciful Fall Frock. So I learned pretty quickly that that wasn't enough money for the time invested in the fabric cost. So Amy Butler Fabrics, they're relatively expensive, and I hadn't yet figured out how to source fabric wholesale. Now, later on in this whole entrepreneurial journey, I did learn how to source things wholesale. If you're going to sell something at any kind of quantity, you don't want to just go on Etsy, buy the fabric, then sew it, and then sell it on Etsy again. That's not going to be enough margin. So that was one of my first lessons in that. And I started to get to the point where somebody would buy a dress, and I actually was a little bit like, oh man, that's when you know you shouldn't be selling it. If your reaction to making a sale is one of dread, like, oh, now I got to spend the nap time making two fanciful fall frocks, and who wants to do that? Then that's whenever you should pivot your business. And I also found that I got really tired of sewing the same thing. So then I started doing something else. I started going to thrift shops and buying like floral curtain fabric and eyelet on something, or like a men's shirt, and turning those things into cute little dresses and just selling one-off things. So I would sew them up in my daughter's size, put her on the porch, take a picture, and then just sell it one at a time, which again was cool because I was making profit because we had this really awesome little thrift shop in town that was close to my house, and the lady just made the prices up out of nowhere. You'd bring up like a handful of stuff and she'd just be like, oh, that's 25 cents. Nothing like that today. I do not see thrift shops like that today, but back then it was like free fabric, so the margin was really good. But still, I felt like there was probably a better way to earn an income. I think I'm going to go a little bit out of order here because I'm pretty sure the first thing I tried, which I'm going to tell you about now, but I'm pretty sure this happened beforehand, was selling cloth diapers. So another thing that I tried was becoming a wholesale. I got wholesale accounts with the cloth diaper brands that were available at that time. So this was, I want to say, 2009 that I tried this. So it was before a lot of the selling on Etsy with the sewing. But I went to, if you guys are old school moms like me, you might remember, and I'm sure they're still around, but now there's like a million diaper brands. At the time, there was two. There was Fuzzy Buns and there was Bum Genius. And you could go on and you could get a wholesale account where you could purchase them for, say, let's just make up a number, $13 per diaper, sell them for whatever the standard retail price, let's just say $23. That seemed pretty cool. I could find a way to, you know, go to like baby expos or sell them online and make a $10 profit per diaper, you know, with doing nothing, not having to sew anything, just market it. Marketing was a little bit shady or sketchy in that time. It wasn't near as hard as it or easy as it is now. So we didn't have internet at home. I went up to my husband's parents' restaurant that they owned and sat there with my baby, because I think this was before I had my second daughter, and made a website. And this was back before, like, if you think making a website is hard now, it's not. It is not. This was hard. And I had no prior experience. So I basically like designed it offline and then uploaded it to the internet. And it was so tricky. But, you know, later on in this episode, you'll see how this all plays in because I had a lot of time just learning and failing. So the website was super ugly. I can still remember it had like little circles that I like drew and really colorful. I don't even remember what I used for the shopping cart, but there was a way that you could purchase it right there. So there was a shopping cart, but I don't remember exactly what I used. Anyways, I remember thinking after I got the website up that people were just going to find it right away and buy it. And if you're familiar with online business at all, they didn't. So then I started buying Google AdSense words. So instead of like, you know, these days you have an Instagram, you have a YouTube, you have a blog, you have an audience of people to sell something to, we didn't back then. And so I just paid money to get to the top of the results whenever you search cloth diaper. Well, I didn't pay enough money because I never made any sales at all. I didn't know what I was doing. I don't even know if I broke even on that because I bought a bunch of diapers and then I would put money into the Google AdWords. And then I also started going to baby expos where we'd pay for, gosh, it was like a big convention center. And it was like $200 to get a table here. And I remember all the times that I did it, I sold enough diapers for it to break even, but never enough to really make a huge profit with it. It was fun. I made a bunch of friends. I even did my own baby expo. So I had one at my aunt's salon, had signs made, put them up all over town. And, you know, just we'd get like a few people that would come. So the point of this, my early entrepreneurial experience of trying to sell diapers, trying to make my own website, trying to sell clothes on Etsy, I learned a lot of very valuable lessons. One lesson I remember learning was when you're at a baby expo, somebody chats with you for a while, ask you a lot of questions about the diapers. If they say, I'm going to come back and buy these in a little while, they aren't. So I see this too with like, I don't know, like there's been people I've talked to about their new businesses or even my own kids. They'll be somewhere like one of the markets or something. And they'll say, oh, well, that person's going to come back and buy one. And I told them, like, so you're going to learn real quick that they're not coming back. They just feel bad. So, I mean, and that's not to say that doesn't happen sometimes, but people did that a lot where they would say, I'm going to come back, and they didn't. So that was one lesson I learned, is that it's really harder to make a sale than you think. I think when you first start any kind of business where there's a product involved, you think that you're going to make the product, make the website, make the cart, and people are going to buy it. And that was like the first lesson I learned, is they're not. It's really hard, even back then, to stand out and to have the superior product. The next lesson I learned is that you have to make enough to actually pay. It has to make sense for you to want to make a product. So if all of the cost of the good that you're producing makes it to where you're only left with like a $5 an hour wage, then it's not worth making. So I'm in a mastermind group with a couple of ladies from the internet, and one of them makes mugs. So she's a potter, she makes mugs, and she was asking about pricing. And one of the other ladies said, now remember, mugs aren't an essential item. So you don't have to charge this to make it, you don't have to necessarily make it affordable. If somebody can't buy your mug that's like handmade with all of these great things and your artistry, they can go to Target and get a mug. So remember that it's okay to charge a price that's going to make it worth it for you. Sometimes you feel guilty as if like the person can't just go buy a dress somewhere else or whatever the item is that you're making, but it has to make sense for you, especially if you are, you know, a mom, you have kids, you're busy, everybody's busy, but you don't have the time to invest unless it's going to be worth it for your family, then it's okay. You don't have to just, you know. And sometimes we get so eager to make a sale. I think back then, I thought this is going to be so fun to see these transactions coming in through Etsy. And it was, but it wore off. The next lesson I learned was just like some basics around a computer. I learned how to make a website. I mean, it's so much different now, but I at least learned a little bit of grit. So I learned like when something is hard to do, just be persistent. And even if you don't get anything out of it monetarily, you become a more resilient person for having gone through the process, and you have more skills than maybe somebody who wouldn't have gone through that process. Another lesson I learned is to figure out how to get the cost of the good you're making down as much as possible. That's neglected sometimes. I think we just want to get something out and then charge what we think it should be worth after, you know, the hours we put in and the cost of what it is. But that's a way to get ahead of the game, is to actually bring that cost of goods sold down, the margin. You want the margin up. Basic business, but sometimes you have to go through it and have a really expensive product before you realize, hey, if I could just get this down, then I'll make a lot more. And if it's more affordable, more people are going to buy it. I learned a lot of marketing lessons, not necessarily because I did anything right, but because I learned what didn't work. Just putting something up and hoping people will come wasn't going to work. I needed to position myself in a unique way, and that would get refined over the next several years. So another thing I tried, which is just kind of an honorable mention, is I started selling off all of my kefir grains. We were making kefir every single day in our house, water kefir and milk kefir. And they multiply whenever you feed them, and whenever you're just simply making it, makes it multiply. And so I just started selling little bags of kefir grains on Etsy. And that was like the best thing. We felt like it was free money at that time, because I would, you know, go to the post office with 5 orders, 10 bucks a pop, 50 bucks just for something that I was already making. Now, I ended up stopping that because with the business ventures I tried in the future, my time is worth way more than that. But in the beginning, it wasn't. In the beginning, that was just a really easy way to make an extra $50, even though it took some time to package it all up. It was great for us. So you will learn how to price your time over the years. And so we'll go now into some of the future businesses. Actually, wait, no, I got to tell you about my blog. Every time I bring this up, I like can't tell you the name of the blog because it's still there. It was a Blogspot blog and I started it when I was pregnant with my second daughter. And oh man, I didn't know what I was doing at all. The recipe would have just the ingredients and like mix it all up and eat it. It's really good. Yay. And so now I know to have a successful blog, you need like frequently asked questions and you need a table. Like you need to like break down each of the things that it takes to make it. You want to explain all the ingredients. You want like detailed instructions. You need to write like 1,000 words at least. But I didn't know that back then. It was really fun to be a new mom, to be learning how to do new things, making up my own recipes, trying out my sourdough starter. At that time, I started it, and then just sharing it. And I loved that. And again, that blog didn't make it. I never did devote a lot of time to learning how it should be done, but it did teach me more skills around the computer and around marketing. Okay, so that's the first, 5 years I did all of these things. I tried them. And as you can see, I didn't stick with any of them. None of those are still a thing that I currently have. I don't have that blog. I don't even know how to log into it. I don't sell kefir grains. I don't sell dresses on Etsy. I don't have wholesale accounts with cloth diaper brands anymore. But all of those things taught me something for me to start my real business. And all of these are real businesses. I don't mean to say like they're not, but my profitable business when I was 30. So that's another thing a lot of people don't realize. Whenever I share some of my, you know, like blog tips and all of the things with the YouTube and the Instagram, I did not start this until I was 30 years old. So I had already had 4 kids. I spent my whole 20s having babies, learning how to make bread, sew clothes, you know, learn my way around a computer, learn a little bit of business basics, what not to do. And then when I was 30, it wasn't like I was like, well, now I'm ready to start a successful business. I just had the experience and the background that made it to where it had a chance at being successful. So none of those early things I did are regrets. They all were learning experiences. And also, if you feel like, say you're 25 years old, you have your first baby, and you're thinking, okay, because today's like a weird day and age where you have to start something. You're not just allowed to just be a mom and figure out how to be a mom, figure out how to run the household. It's like you also have the opportunity to share it and make an income. And I'm not saying that's not really cool because it is, but I'm almost glad that wasn't available for me because I would have been tempted to do it. As you can see, I try all the things. I still try all the things. I'm not just content to have a podcast or have an Instagram or have a TikTok or a YouTube or a podcast. I have them all. I have eBooks. I have courses. I like doing all the things, but I'm glad that I didn't spend those early years trying that. I'm glad that I just spent it like learning the things that I wanted to share, learning about business. And I'm not saying that it's not a good idea to start something when you're 25, because in some ways I'm like, that'd be pretty cool because by the time you're 45, you had more years. But for me, I'm glad it worked out that way. I am. I don't have any regrets that I didn't stick with any of those earlier things. So at age 30, I had just had my 4th child a few months before. Around, I think it was December of 15, I bought a domain name. Now at that time, I still had the Etsy shop. I believe I was selling dresses. I think I said that I didn't still have it, but I totally did. Okay, sorry. Minor thing I forgot. I switched into home goods. So remember I was selling dresses, decided that I hated selling the same thing over and over again. Also felt that it was a little bit too expensive for the fabric and the time invested. So at some point, I remember, okay, sorry, it's coming back to me now. My youngest sister, she started an embroidery business where she'd put monograms on things and sell it. and she was making a really good profit with it. And so I also purchased a machine. I didn't go into the exact same thing as her. She was marketing more to kids her age at the time. She was a teenager. So she was doing like sweatshirts and hoodies and Sherpas and all of that. I decided to start buying wholesale kids' pajamas, kids' Easter baskets, and the kids' stuff and monogramming that. So that way you make like an extra $10 per item because you put it in the embroidery machine and it puts on personalization. So that's still a really great opportunity. And that's how I started around, I guess this was probably earlier, probably when I was 29, I did that. And then when I was 30, this is why this isn't significant because this is where I started Farmhouse on Boone. I decided I wanted to start a blog as a way to market the items that were on my Etsy shop that were personalized. So not only did I do the jammies and the Easter things, I also started selling pillow covers and putting monograms on the pillow covers. And I had a name for the shop. I believe I called it Ruthie Bell Home because I originally started my Etsy shop whenever I had one little baby. Her name was Ruthie Bell. And so I called it that, you know, proud mom. And then I started adding like other stuff and home products. So I decided I'd make a blog called RuthieBellHome.com because I didn't really understand any way that I could make money other than like having a blog and then selling products associated with it. I later learned there's a lot of ways to sell advertising and all kinds of stuff. But at the time, that was the way that made sense to me. I kept that domain for about a month. I think I wrote a few blog posts. Again, I didn't know what I was doing. They probably had like 50 words and were just not well researched. But anyways, in, I believe it was January. So maybe let's just say I bought Ruthie Bell Home in November. In about January, I decided, I think that I want to pivot. I don't think I just want this to be about my Etsy shop. And I was trying to think of what I wanted to do at that time. The farmhouse, like decorating, Joanna Gaines, that was all at scale, full blown, everything, like the rage right then, okay? And I was very drawn to all that. I liked the idea of feeling like I was in this country home, barefoot, cooking for my family, windows open, linen curtains flapping in the wind. And even though I was in town, I was wanting to, I definitely caught the wave of everybody being very excited by all of that. And I wanted to make it a farmhouse. I wanted this little home in town, even though it wasn't out on a farm. I didn't feel like that was going to happen anytime soon, just due to budget and, you know, everything. I didn't think that that would work out. And it didn't happen for a while. I decided I'm going to make this my farmhouse. I don't care that we can't move. I'm just going to make it my farmhouse. We were on Boone Street. So I purchased farmhouseonboone.com. And you know, would I call it that today? Probably not. I don't even live on Boone Street. We do have a real farmhouse, but that was the reason for it. And I'm so glad I made the pivot because the Etsy shop has nothing to do with anything anymore. We dropped that part of the business very quickly, which I'll go into. All right, we'll take a quick break to tell you about my 5-day blogging business challenge. So if you followed along for a while, you might know that Luke and I have done this exclusively from home, the blog business, for over 5 years now. He quit his job and we run my blog. Now, I also have since added, of course, a podcast. I have a YouTube channel, but the blog in itself could support our family. And I love the passive income that the blog provides. It's the least invasive for our family life. It's the easiest thing to work around. If I had to get rid of every aspect of my business, the blog would be the last to go. I love to help students learn how to do this for their own families, for their own idea, their own business, with my 5-day blog challenge. So this is 5 days to narrow down your niche, craft your brand, and come up with a content plan for a successful blogging business. Blogging is one of those things that people think is dead, and I'm here to tell you that it is the most profitable part of my business, so it is so not dead. But the reason they think that is because there's a strategy to it. It's not just a journal anymore. That kind of content's reserved for Instagram, for YouTube. It's different, but as big of an opportunity as ever. So if you are interested in figuring out or you're just curious, it's totally free, about blogging, you can join my challenge by heading to bit.ly/5-day-blog-challenge. That's bit.ly/5,
day blog challenge. It's case sensitive, so all lowercase. All right, hope that that is helpful for you.
Okay, so again, I started the blog very imperfectly. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was excited about it. I remember this was 8 years ago this month. We go as a family to ski in Colorado every year. As growing up as a kid, we went every year from the age I was 10 all the way until this year, 8 years ago, that I'm about to tell you about. And that was actually the last year I went to Colorado because after going and sitting in the condo with four little kids, nobody could really ski because nobody was big enough. I decided that from here on, I would just stay back. So Luke will go this year with the older kids. And that's what we've been doing for a lot of years. But that was my last year going. But the reason I say this is I remember being in that condo and having my laptop and showing my dad all this stuff, like, and you can do this and this and this. And he's like, cool, cool, you know. And I was just so convinced that I'd figure out how to, I think I had learned about like advertising with one of the big ad networks. I learned about affiliate marketing and I saw the opportunity for it, but I had absolutely no idea how I was going to turn that into anything. So that year in 2016, I started an Instagram. I actually got my first smartphone. So I didn't have a smartphone at all my whole life. And then my sister told me that I should really get on Instagram to promote my blog. And so in May of 2016, I got an Instagram account and I kind of made a big mistake. And I'm not saying that I regret it because it all works out at this point, but I saw Instagram and I realized that I was growing really fast because I posted every single day for the best practices of that day and age. And it was taking off and my blog was still getting no traffic at all, nothing. Now, of course, that's because I was doing nothing right. I hadn't invested in any courses, any trainings. I didn't know anything. I was just posting to it, whatever I felt like posting. I wasn't worrying about keyword research, nothing. But on Instagram, it was at that time just pictures. It was very visual, still very visual. And I was getting good at figuring out how to, you know, compose pictures and make them beautiful. I mean, still like now I probably would not want to scroll back on there, but it was working and I was growing a huge following. And I kind of, it wasn't that I gave my blog up. I still kept it, but I kind of was like, okay, so Instagram is what you actually do. You don't blog, you do Instagram. And so for that first 2016, that whole year, I mostly just did Instagram. I post on there every single day. I like collaborated with people. I was in tons of DMs. I was very active on trying to get that account to grow. And I kind of let the blog just sit on the back burner every once in a while posting to it. I had no real schedule, no real strategy with it. And then by the end of that year, I think I want to say I had like 20,000 followers on Instagram. And I noticed something. I noticed that I wasn't actually making any money from it, even though now I know now like 20,000 followers on Instagram isn't that big of a deal because it's been around so long. It's very common to have that. There's more people on it. There's a lot of explosive growth through things like Reels. But at that time, 20,000 followers was a ton. And I really could only get brands to give me free products. I couldn't figure out how to actually get paid in any way. With Instagram, I definitely got that shiny object syndrome for several months and then learned that it wasn't paying off like people maybe not necessarily promised, but what maybe I just expected without really looking into it. So there was another lesson along the way. There's been lots of lessons within this business. I don't want this business to come off as like the one that made it because there's, you know, this is 8 years in the making, lots of challenges along the way. And there's still things that I'm constantly learning with it. It's all very much a learning experience, but it was early 2017 that Luke and I sat down together at a coffee shop and made a plan for how he could leave his job. Now, at this point, I wasn't making any money. Well, scratch that. I did have Mediavine on my blog. So I think the blog was making about $500 a month, which I say that like, oh, it was only $500 a month. But it was one, that is a lot of money to consistently be making on something that you've only just kind of been building, you know, here and there. And then, but two, it was huge to us because we were living on a very low income, especially for having four kids. And so it really just opened our eyes to, okay, if we had more time to spend at this, or if we really buckle down, if you can make $500 a month with, you know, a year's worth of effort and bad effort at that, what would it look like if we went all in? So we sat down together at a coffee shop in early 2017, and we made the audacious goal that we would have Luke quit his job and we'd be doing the blogging business, which, you know, involved some Instagram deals here and there, the blog on Mediavine, by 6 months from then. So it didn't quite turn out that way, but the way that we were going to make the goal happen was I was going to do 2 blog posts a week, no matter what, that entire year, so that at the end of that year, we'd have 100 blog posts circulating the internet, all our little passive income machines, bringing in people and making money off of that. So that was kind of the bigger vision for it. Now, Luke and I always thought, and we didn't really know how it would transpire, but we always kind of thought we would do some kind of family business. His mom and dad have always worked together at their restaurant, and you know, they have their own restaurant. My parents have always worked together with their feed and farm and ag business. So we just figured that we would figure out something. We weren't really sure what. We definitely didn't think the way that it happened is how it would happen, but it wasn't something so far. It wasn't like, you know, so far from our realm of possibility. It wasn't like Luke had this job, but he was like, I want to die at this job. It's just my favorite thing. And there are people that have jobs like that where it's their calling. They love it. They've trained for it. They're built for it. That wasn't our situation. We knew that it was sort of a temporary thing. And when I say temporary, he was there, I think almost 14 years before I met, like total, like from before I met him until he quit for the blog. It was 14 years, but we didn't think he'd still be working there, you know, in his late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, all that good stuff. So we sat down together. We said, okay, I'm going to just like do nap times, bedtime. I'm going to, no matter what happens this year, get out 2 blog posts a week. Now, at that time, I was very much creating content for Pinterest. And in blogging, if you're in some of my courses, you know this. If you just are a blogger, you know, you probably know this also. There are kind of 2 things to write for, and you balance out which one you choose to write blog posts for. Some work for both, some don't, but Pinterest or search engines. And at that time, a lot of my traffic was coming in through Pinterest. This is common with new bloggers. Before they really build up their authority with Google, a lot of their topics will take off on if they make the right kind of Pinterest graphics. So my traffic was coming from Pinterest, and I just had it in my head. Okay, if I can make $500 a month with, you know, these few posts that are doing well over on Pinterest, or several posts doing well over on Pinterest, what if for a year I made 100 posts that could all be on Pinterest and all have some chance of at least getting, you know, a few views here and there? That would really add up. So that whole year, it was a little bit tricky because I did get pregnant in March. I had my 5th child. No, let's see. He was born in December. So that means I got pregnant, whatever, you know, somewhere around there, March. So all through the year of 2017, I was pregnant and had a baby, but I was very proud because I proved to myself, even though, again, I still didn't really know what I was doing with the blog, I still was not writing the perfect content. But what I did do was I proved to myself that I could stick with something and I could follow through on a goal because I did get those 2 blog posts per week written. So up to this point, you know, I tried a lot of things. Things didn't work out. Whenever they didn't work out, historically, I quit those things. And I really wanted to prove to myself that I could do something and not quit. And that was what 2017 was for us. If you're keeping track, Luke should have quit his job sometime around July or August of that year, if we're going to make it with our 6 months goal. And we weren't quite ready. So one, we didn't have the insurance thing all figured out yet, and I was about to have a baby that year. And then 2, I don't think the income was quite where we wanted it to be. Really, all that we wanted to do was replace his income. We weren't looking to make, you know, $10,000 a month or anything like that for him to quit. We just needed it to be what he was currently making. We already had our house paid off. We had 0 debt. We just had a position where we felt like we could be a little bit risky. We had savings. And so we weren't, you know, waiting super long, but we just weren't quite there yet. So let's see here. By May of 2018, we were able for him to quit his job. It was so scary because the business is doing nothing like it is now. Like, so it was just kind of like, it was just replacing his income, you know, it was just there. But again, we had the savings. So we thought, you know, if everything just completely tanked, we still could live off of savings or rice and beans or whatever. We were so committed to wanting to do this. This was our dream for him to be able to quit his job and for us to all work together as a family. So at that time, the way that the income was spread out was I had started a YouTube channel in late 2017. So when I was just about to have my fifth child, started making YouTube videos. So I had some income from Google AdSense over on YouTube. I had some from Mediavine. I had some from Amazon. I had a few affiliate partnerships. And I think like maybe a few brand deals. I had it figured up that I earned about $5,000 a month spread out across all those things. Just about like $1,000 per was kind of how it worked out at that time. So the business since then, I mean, it has changed so much with the way the internet has changed, with the way that the income is diversified. The income itself has been like a snowball going down a hill. It has only increased since then pretty, you know, substantially each year. It grows. It just grows because we are consistently devoting time to it. I am learning about which ways to spend my time that makes the most sense for us. I've learned how to hire out a lot. That has been so important. Figuring out how to develop a team so that I don't have to be all the places. I don't have to, you know, do all the things. That has been very, like a very big business lesson for me is learning how to manage. I find that I'm actually terrible at it. Learning how to communicate, learning how to find the right people. I have the best team right now. I've learned over the years, like through a lot of trial and error, things that have worked, things that haven't. I have such a fabulous team right now that keeps everything going. I've learned how to invest my money. So with the business, that's something that has been such a lesson over the years, is not always keeping everything that I make in order to just like spend it, but instead keep all of my living expenses low, like, you know, not having the debt, so that I can keep reinvesting. So I've invested in better gear, better cameras. I didn't have those at first, but as I make a little money, I've invested back in better people, more people. Just investing in it every step of the way has never failed us. So one thing I think I forgot to mention was in the early part two, when Luke quit his job, I believe I still had my Etsy shop. I forgot about that. That was probably where that last $1,000 came from. So I know it was around five, but it kind of was split between five different things pretty evenly. And I still had my Etsy shop where I actually hired some local teenagers in early 20s. I believe they were all actually teenagers. They came over, they sewed stuff, they shipped it. And that arm of the business did make money still. It was like grain sack pillow covers that were personalized, some table runners, various things like that. I think we did some blankets as well. And that was like another little buffer for our income. But within probably a year, I learned that all of the passive ways of making income were so much more profitable that I wanted to let that one go. So that's another business thing that you'll learn over the years, is just which things make sense to keep doing and which things don't. And it's hard to figure it out. There will be probably sometimes you might regret, you know, cutting off one arm of the business, but sometimes where you look back and think that was totally the right idea. So for me, yes, I had outsourced a lot of the help with that, but I spent so much time redoing pictures, redoing listings, customer service. It's, you know, just when you hire somebody doesn't mean that all of the work goes off your shoulders. That's another business lesson. It 100% doesn't. When you hire someone new, it kind of just creates a different kind of dynamic for you in the business where you're more of the CEO, maybe not as much of the action part, but there's still many responsibilities that come with that. And I felt like my world could really open up if we closed that arm of the business. I could focus more on the more passive parts like blogging and creating courses and all of that. And I'm so thankful that I did that. So that's kind of my entrepreneurial journey in a nutshell. If you want more on the specifics of any part of this, I'm trying to think if I like glossed over certain parts and went more in depth on certain parts. I'm gonna have to wrap it up soon though, because Luke and the kids are going to go skiing at a tiny little ski resort in our area that is not at all. It's not a mountain or anything. It's just a hill, but they're going to go there. And so I need to wrap it up, but make sure to go to that bit.ly/SFL questions. I would be happy to do another episode like this or to go into any part of that more in depth. Also, if you want to start a blog, make sure to check out my free masterclass and my 5-day blog challenge. So I have the masterclass at bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school. And then the 5-day challenge, if you like more of an actionable, like what you can do each day, is at bit.ly/5-day blog challenge. They'll also be in the description box or the show notes, depending on where you're watching this. If you want any more details on this or just to submit any other questions, again, go to the question box. But if you want to start your business, those two resources, do one or both, are a great place to start. There's a lot that I wish I'd known whenever I started all of this. A lot I've learned along the way, some very specific nuts and bolts. I didn't get into it here because, or I did a little bit, but not all the way, because a lot of you might have other businesses that you want to do, or maybe it's just entertaining for you. But if blogging specifically or being a YouTuber or an influencer of any kind is something you're thinking about for your family, those will be great resources for you. Well, as always, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.